I've got some sandwiches I brought from the cafe back in Rimrock, and I'll boil up a pot of coffee. You think you can stop flapping your gums long enough to eat?
How the hell am I gonna eat with my hands behind my back? I got to tend to some other business, too, if you know what I mean. You gonna help me with that, bounty hunter?
Luke resisted the impulse to backhand him. He untied McCluskey's ankles and stepped back quickly, drawing one of his guns.
Get down.
McCluskey kicked his feet free of the stirrups, swung his right leg over the horse's back, and slid to the ground. He landed awkwardly and almost fell before righting himself.
Turn around.
Luke didn't holster the Remington until McCluskey was facing away from him. Then he took a pair of leg irons from one of his saddlebags and snapped them around McCluskey's ankles. The chain had just enough play to let the outlaw shuffle along a few inches at a time. When his ankles were secure, Luke unlocked the handcuffs, again stepping back swiftly so McCluskey wouldn't have a chance to spin around and make a grab for him.
There's some bushes right over there. Go take care of your business and then we'll have something to eat.
Moving slowly and tentatively like a little old man, McCluskey headed toward the bushes.
Stay where I can see your head and shoulders.
Luke started gathering fallen branches to build a fire on a rocky spot near the edge of the gully. He glanced toward McCluskey now and then as he got the fire going and set the coffee pot at the edges of the flames to boil. After a few minutes, the outlaw emerged from the brush and shuffled over to stand next to the fire across from Luke.
How about leaving the cuffs off until after we've eaten? It sure make things a lot easier.
For you or for me?
Hell, for both of us. You don't want to have to feed me and give me drinks from a coffee cup, do you?
As a matter of fact, Luke did not. As he straightened, he reached for his gun, thinking he could make McCluskey back off, then set the man's food and drink on the other side of the fire and cover him while he ate. But he didn't get the chance. Before he could draw the Remington, McCluskey launched himself across the flames in a diving tackle that caught Luke around the waist. The impact of their collision drove Luke backward, and suddenly there was nothing underneath his boots except empty air. McCluskey had knocked him off the edge of the gully. Luke's feet hit the sloping side of the wash, but it was too steep for him to catch his balance. He kept toppling toward the bottom with McCluskey hanging on to him. As they rolled over and over, the outlaw grabbed desperately for one of Luke's guns. Luke's head smashed against a rock on the side of the gully with stunning force. Barely aware that his prisoner succeeded in snatching one of the Remingtons from its holster, the realization shot through Luke's brain just in time for him to wrap his left hand around the barrel and shove it aside. The gun's muzzle was so close to Luke's ear that the shot felt like it had slammed against him as a physical blow. As they rolled, McCluskey's face loomed above him, so Luke jabbed a fist into it, striking the outlaw squarely in the nose. He knew from experience that being hit like that stung like blazes and was enough to incapacitate a man for a few seconds. Luke tried to seize that advantage by locking his right hand around his throat. He squeezed hard enough to make McCluskey's eyes bulge out. Then they hit the bottom of the wash with enough force to jolt them apart. Luke grabbed for the other revolver, but he found only an empty holster. The gun had come out during their mad tumble down the slope. He rolled and kicked just as McCluskey tried to bring the Remington to bear on him. The toe of his boot struck McCluskey's wrist and knocked the gun out of his hand. It flew a good 10 feet before it hit the bottom of the sandy, rock-littered wash. Luke scrambled after the weapon, but before he could reach him, McCluskey was on him again. He dropped his feet over Luke's head, snaring him with the chain between the leg irons. Luke grabbed the chain just as McCluskey jerked his knees back, and his grip was all that was preventing the iron links from crushing his windpipe. McCluskey dragged him over onto his back, and he tightened the stranglehold. At the same time, the outlaw picked up one of the rocks scattered around the bottom of the gully and swung it up. Then he brought it down toward Luke's head. That rock was the size of two fists put together, and it would have crushed Luke's skull like an eggshell if it had landed. But Luke saw the blow coming just in time to jerk his head aside. The rock slammed into the ground a couple of inches from his right ear. Luke let go of the chain and immediately the pressure increased on his throat. He reached up and behind him with both hands and caught hold of one of McCluskey's knees. From that angle, he couldn't exert as much strength as he would have liked, but he forced the joint in the wrong direction as best he could. The grip on Luke's neck eased. He twisted and shoved, and his head popped free of the hold McCluskey had had on him. He levered himself up on his left arm and buried his right fist into McCluskey's midsection. McCluskey rolled onto his side. Luke knew McCluskey's discomfort. His lungs were starved for air, but he couldn't afford to take the time to catch his breath. He went after McCluskey, scrambling up and throwing punch after punch. He pounded the outlaw's head from side to side. Blood splattered from McCluskey's nose and mouth. He put up his hands, but he wasn't fighting. He was pawing feebly in an attempt to block Luke's punches. Luke drove one last punch into McCluskey's jaw. The outlaw's eyes rolled up as he went limp. He was out cold.